Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
But I'll tell you what, the very last book I read, PJ, is a book by Sandy Barker called One Summer in Santorini. This is when you're done reading Virgil, you're done reading more Jane Austen, and you just want a nice, lighthearted beach read, something nice, a nice romance. One Summer in Santorini hit the spot.
Nice.
Sandy Barker did her own travels to Greece, and she wrote this. It's about a girl, Sarah, who goes on a cruise, or goes on a boat, not really a cruise. She goes on a boat trip with a bunch of other people. She's just had it out of a relationship. She wants to go do something fun. She's definitely not looking for love. She meets a silver fox called James. She says, well, that's fine. We'll not see him again. She meets a young American called Josh. It's a lot of will they, won't they? And then, of course, James shows up, and then she's got to make a choice. It's perfect. It's simple. I read it in 2 days, and it hit the spot.
Nice. Awesome.
Ah, but hold on, PJ. I think I hear the telephone ringing.
Oh, who's this?
Hey, you're through to Books Boys. You've got Dean on the line. Who's calling?
Hi, this is Sandy Barker. I'm calling from Melbourne, Australia.
Hi, Sandy. You know, it's a good coincidence you've called in, because we were literally just talking about your book that I just read, One Summer in Santorini. So that was well timed.
Well, you know, I have a sixth sense about these things.
Are you?
Yeah, we're good. We're you know, we're coming into spring now, so we've got that to look forward to. But yeah, I was really excited to see on social media that you were reading my book.
I was indeed. Yes, I had it on Instagram. So is this your first one?
Yes, actually, it's my first one. And, you know, this phone call is very timely, actually, because I just finished yesterday writing I think it's my seventh book, which is actually the fifth one in this series. So Santorini is actually the start of a 5-book series. And books 4 and 5 are coming out next year. So, yeah, it's my very first book with one more chapter. I just can't believe that it was only a couple of years ago that it was published, and now here we are. I've just had my fifth book out with them, and you know, I'm writing book 7, so it's all happening, it's all trundling along very well.
That's a very high high rate. I mean, because this book's only been out a couple of years, as you say. Are you typically writing more than one per year then?
I am. When I got the publishing contract with One More Chapter, I already had 3 books finished. So they took them on, you know, they're like, we'll publish those. So that was Santorini, That Night in Paris, and A Sunset in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of already ahead of the writing schedule. And then in 2019, I pitched to them The Christmas Swap, which was my 4th book, and that came out last year. And then mid last year, I pitched to them The Dating Game, which is the book that's just come out a few weeks ago. So I do work, so I do have a day job as well, and only work 4 days a week at the moment, but I do tend to write pretty quickly. It's taken me, the last book that I've just finished is called A Wedding in Tuscany, so no spoilers, but there are 2 sisters in the series, Sarah, who was in One Summer in Santorini, and her sister Kat, and one of the sisters is getting married, and I started writing that book probably back in, I want to say, May. And so it's about 4 months part-time writing. Yep.
Wow. So, because, yeah, you're getting through these quickly, but you're working as well. So that's very impressive.
Well, thank you. It is. I, you know, people are like, how do you do it? And I fire back with, how do you have children and a career? You know, like partner and I, we don't have children. So I know that that does free up kind of a lot of time and mental space and emotional space from other writers. And, you know, I know a lot of writers who are school teachers, and I used to be a school teacher, and I know that they don't, you know, they're not 9 to 5. They don't work their 40 hours a week and call it good. They're working 60 hour weeks, mm-hmm. and they are writing books. So I never complain if I feel like it's a bit much or intense. You know, I do my 4 days. I don't bring work home, and I can fit the writing in around that. But, you know, living in Melbourne, we have the dubious honour of being the city that has been in lockdown for the longest in the entire world.
Wow.
So we've had 9 months, literally 9 months in the last 18 months of lockdown. And that's, you're not allowed to go, you know, X amount of kilometers from your home. You're not allowed to have visitors. You're not allowed to leave the home except for these 5 reasons, like full lockdown.
Well, so you're in full lockdown still. Wow.
We are still in full lockdown. We've got another month to go. But, you know, the silver lining to that is it really does free up a lot of time for writing, because there's not much else to do. There's only so much Netflix you can write.
This is true.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realize that anywhere was still in, like, you know, full lockdown. I thought everyone was doing a kind of partial, maybe there's some restrictions. That's quite intense to still be in full lockdown.
It is. And we've kind of gone into it and come out and gone into it and come out. And so this last stint was supposed to be like 3 days, and it's been 2.5 months now. And we've got another month to go. But look, you know, I think it's really highlighted how much the writing is an escape, not just for my readers, because I write travel fiction. It's also an escape for me. When I was writing Tuscany, I went back to all my photographs of the last time I was there, and I was reading kind of my travel blogs and lots of desktop research and watching movies set in Tuscany. And it's nice and immersive for mm-hmm. me. It's kind of my armchair travel is writing these books. So, I have, as I said, it's a silver lining. And I think as well, one of the things that's really been highlighted to me in the last year and a half is how wonderful the writing community is. I mean, we're just so supportive of each other. And it's particularly when you're a romance author. I mean, we are genuinely just all cheering each other on. It's like, you go, girl, you go, guy. And, you know, I've had people host me on their blogs. I host authors on my blogs. We're interacting on social media all the time. So it's kind of my online happy space, you know, that I can retreat to mentally, even though we're confined to the same, you know, 6 rooms in our apartment. I think both of those have been really, really helpful in kind of keeping my wits and keeping positive about the, you know, the global situation.
No, it's good that, you know, you're right. One positive aspect of it is that we have time to work on projects and writing and things like that. You know, I did a tremendous amount of art during the lockdown over here. So I understand where you're coming from, you know. So I was going to display my knowledge and be impressive and say, well, I've only read One Summer in Santorini, but I'm aware that we've got one in Paris and Sydney, but you've beat me to that. So now it sounds like I didn't know at all.
No, you did. You absolutely did. I know you did. I know you do your research on this podcast.
So we've got Tuscany, and what's coming next?
So the next book in the series, book 4, is called, it's set in Bali. We're just kind of finalizing the title at the moment, but it's a supporting character from That Night in Paris called Jay Lee, and she goes on sabbatical to Bali and meets a hot Scot. So it's set in both Bali and in Edinburgh. And I wrote that because in 2018, my partner and I went on sabbatical. We packed up and traveled for about 13 months and lived, you know, we moved to places and would live there. So we lived in Bali for 2 months, and it was our, you know, part of our sabbatical. And, you know, we lived in this wonderful community for digital nomads, and it really inspired this book. I wanted to send a character there, and I was just kind of thinking, which of my characters, you know, in all of the books, not just the main characters, which of my characters can I send to Bali? So I sent Jay Lee there, and so that's coming in February next year. And then in a wedding in Tuscany, we kind of pull everybody together. So the two sisters, Kat and Sarah, and their supporting cast of characters from all the other books kind of converge on Tuscany for a wedding. But I'm not revealing which sister's getting married. I'm working on that. And then once I've kind of got those ready to go, I'm going to start on a follow-up to the Christmas Swap. So when I started writing the Christmas Swap, when did I start writing that? A year and a half ago now. I wrote it as a standalone. I didn't know it was going to have a follow-up, but there were a lot of cries when readers got their hands on it of what happens next, you know? What's going to happen with all of these women? And it's about three best friends who live, one lives in Melbourne, one lives in Colorado, and one lives in London. And they decide to swap Christmases for the holidays. And, you know, I write rom-coms, so of course they all meet a love interest. And now I'm going to be writing the follow-up to that. So yeah, there's always something in the pipeline. I don't think there's any rest for wicked authors.
Yeah, it sounds like you've no intention of resting, to be honest.
Yeah, I absolutely love writing, and the aim is to become a full-time author.
Yeah.
So it's looking like, my contract, I work with Pearson, I work in adult education, which I love. I actually really love I call it my day job, inverted commas, but you know, it's not a grind. It's not something I hate to go to. I really love my work. And my boss, I've been very transparent with my boss, even going down from 5 days a week to 4 days a week is about the writing. It's just freeing up every Friday to just dedicate, you know, sit down at my desk and sure. do writing, editing. So, I've been really frank about it, and they're like cheering me on, and your publication day, yay, go you. And which is really nice. And I'm looking at probably by the end of next year, I will be able to step away from other work and just focus on writing, which is the dream. It's the dream. So of course I'm going to work my little bum off until I get to that point, and then beyond that point. So yeah, there's always something in the pipeline.
Nice. No, that's good. And it's nice to hear that we do catch up with Sarah again, because I was obviously curious about, you know, where it's going to go. Go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, that for anyone who hasn't read Santorini yet, it does leave lots of questions at the end of the book. Were you going to ask about that? Sorry.
I was just going to say, do people typically tell you whether they wanted her to end up with, you know, with Josh or James? They have an opinion on which guy she should have ended up with.
Oh, for sure. Yes, for sure, for sure. And, you know, when I wrote that, I kind of always knew I would continue her story, and her story continues directly in A Sunset in Sydney. Like, it picks up, you know, a few hours mm-hmm. after the first book finishes. And when I was writing that book, I knew I wanted to write the book. I knew I wanted to kind of see out who she ended up with. But as I was writing that book, I just kept flip-flopping myself. I was like, she's with James, and I'm like, oh, she's got to end up with James because he's just so gorgeous and lovely, and oh, she's with Josh, oh no, she's got to end up with Josh. And I kept going back and forth, and it really wasn't, and I swear this is no lie, because I am a total pantser when it comes to my writing, I didn't know who she was going to end up with until the last 20 pages of a 400 page book. So
I have heard
from readers, like, you kept me in suspense, I had no idea what was going to happen, you know, was she going to end up with this one or by herself, because that was always an option, that's always on the cards. So yeah, it's and then of course there's the whole Team Josh or Team James, you know, is it the young American guy Josh or the silver fox mm-hmm. James? And I have to say, I don't know if you know this about me, but the book is inspired by my real life love story. So my partner and I, we've just celebrated 15 years together, and I met him on a pier in Santorini right as we were about to go on a sailing trip. So I started writing the book as a love letter to him. You know, I kind of wanted to almost document like what that was like to fall in love on a sailing trip in the Greek islands. He was, mm-hmm. he's an American boy. I was a girl from Sydney. He was much younger than me. Like, So there was a lot of truth in the first parts of the book. But I realized pretty quickly as I was writing it that it's not a travel memoir, Sandy. So, you know, you're fictionalizing this. What's going to amp up the stakes here? And I introduced the silver fox. And people have asked me, was there a silver fox in real life? There was not. There was just the cute American boy. Mm. And as I said, we've been together now 15 years. But, it was really fun to write that because there's a lot of truth in it. There's, you know, I've been to all those places, I've had those travel experiences, which is for quite a lot of my books. I bring in my own travel experiences, but I had the chance to play as an author. Bringing in the silver fox and creating the love triangle was a lot of fun.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I knew that you'd done traveling, so I knew there was a realistic element to it, but I didn't realize that you'd actually met your partner and that much of it was kind of true. So that's really, really, really cool to know. But yeah, you did invent the silver fox.
Yes, totally invented him. And, you know, we actually went back to Greece, at our 10-year anniversary. We met up with the same skipper.
Wow.
True story. I know. He's Duncan, called Patrick, right? in real life. He's called Patrick, and he's a Kiwi. He's not Duncan from Queensland. But we met up with the same skipper and did another sailing trip around the Cyclades Islands with him, and had a few nights in Santorini together. Because even though Ben and I met in Santorini, we met, got on a boat, and left. So we actually hadn't spent time in Santorini together, but we did that for our 10th anniversary. And yeah, we're really, we adore Patrick, our skipper, and he did, for those who have read the book or about to read the book, he did have his girlfriend on the first trip, and they're married now and have two kids. And like, it's just, you know, there's a lot of truth in that. So I did borrow heavily from our floating family. A lot of those characters are inspired by real people. And it's just, you know, I've been really cheeky actually as an author, because I often will kind of beg and borrow and steal from people, real people that we know, and kind of, you know, traits from different people and smoosh them together. In the Bali book, there's a lovely supporting character who's kind of an amalgam of two women who we met when we lived in Bali. So it's in my homage to those beautiful friends. One's from, you know, one's in, lives in Amsterdam, one lives in Chicago, and they're just kind of, they're very similar women, very smart and, you know, very loving and generous. And so I just kind of mushed them together and created this character. But I've certainly been known to do that a few times.
Mm-hmm. And was Patricia based on the character that kind of doesn't really get on with anyone and ends up getting kicked out? You know,
we did have somebody a similar situation, and I thought that was we found that it was quite a bonding exercise. Really, was that there was somebody who just didn't want to be on the trip, and you know, once that person left the trip, everybody seemed to relax, and we all just got along. Like, it was, I mean, that first trip was probably one of the most magical 10 days of my life. And not only did I meet my partner, but, you know, I made lifelong friends, and we just, it was everything. The core theme of the book, which is her kind of just reconnecting with herself, that was what that trip was like for me. And I really wanted to capture that in the book, because I myself was a little lost before I went on that trip. And I, you know, had sworn off men. I didn't want to meet anyone. I kept telling my partner, go away. So there's a lot of truth. There's a lot of emotional truth in that. And I think of all my books, that's probably the truest. Emotionally for me, okay. Like, it's most reflective of me, whereas the others I kind of spring from my imagination and, you know, my empathy with other people.
Okay, well, that's good. You pulled a bit of a Chekhov's gun, because I, you know, we have James at the beginning, but I'd kind of forgotten about him, and I was just rooting to see, is she going to get with Josh? And then when James reappears, that makes sense. There's a reason that he was in the story earlier randomly. That makes sense now, but I didn't see it coming, you know.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun, actually, because when I was on Santorini before I got on the trip, I did actually have a similar exchange with an older gentleman who was very attractive. I never saw him again, but I thought it was really fun to kind of play with that character. Yeah, I like to put my characters into situations that just explode everything and just combobulate them.
It's a lot of fun. I'm a diehard romantic, so I'm always rooting for romance in any book. You know, even if it's not a romance, aww, I'm always trying to find where are we gonna, you know, who's gonna fall in love. I need to find that somewhere. So it's nice that it's nice to just read a pure romance and you're rooting all the way. You know.
Yeah. Look, for sure.
I'm going to pop a link. Your website is just your name, so it's stanleybarker.com, but I'll pop a link on the show notes as well, and people can read about you, and obviously your books are on Amazon and things like that. Would you always ask every author one question? So I'll ask you it before you go. If there was any book that you could have written, any historical book, you know, any famous book, what would it have been?
Well, I know you asked this question, so I did actually have a think about this, and this isn't, you know, like a, this isn't kind of like one of the classics or anything, but I absolutely love Diana Gabaldon's Outlander series. And I mean, I know that the TV show is known for its kind of sexy love interests and steamy romance, but there's such beautifully written books, like the history and the research she does. Her prose is unbelievable, and this epic love story that transcends, you know, 9 books and 2 centuries, and I mean she's just unbelievable, and she's such a world builder. So I would say her. Like, I would, in my entire writing career, if I ever wrote a tenth as good as she does, I will be happy. So yeah, Diana Gabaldon's Outlander, starting with the first one.
I've never read them, but someone did actually recommend them to me. Must have only been 2 weeks ago, actually. Someone was recommending them to me. Yes, that's the second time I've heard of them in such a short period of time. So I have to look into them now. Unfortunately, like any avid reader, I've got about 40 books in my queue, you know, to get to. So it's very, I'm always afraid of putting more in the queue, you know.
I know. And I get asked by author friends, can you, you know, would you like to do an early read? I always say yes every single time, because I'm like, yes, you know, and I can read pretty quickly. I do read pretty quickly, but still I feel so guilty because I like take on these new books and then I'm looking at my Kindle and you know, if my Kindle weighed as much as how many books are on it, I couldn't pick it up.
Well, believe it or not, I have a physical queue of books, you know, I have a shelf and they're in order. They're in the order that I want to read them. But it takes me a long, you know, even at a book a week, I keep buying more. So the queue never goes down. Sitting at 40, maybe it drops to 30, 25, and then I go and buy another 20, you know, so it never stops.
It's a curse. It's a curse. It's a blessing and a curse of the avid reader. But I feel your pain. I think if I had to look at physical representations of my TBR list, I would just cry. I would just crawl under the bed and cry, because it just feels a little daunting sometimes. So I really admire the fact that you have a bookshelf of them. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it can be daunting. I feel the pain. Well, Sandy, it was lovely hearing from you. Thank you so much for calling into the show. And as I say, we'll put a link to the website and things in the notes, and have yourself, I was going to say good evening, but it's morning for you. So have yourself a good day.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Great to talk to you.
Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye.
That's thanks to Sandy. PJ, what else have you got for us?
Well, Dean, last of all, I said I haven't read that much this month, but I have been reading, I mean, still reading, the Asterix comics. So, the Asterix comics, guys, I really like comics now. Dean and I have got some different, you know, we've got our differences here.
Disagree a little bit.
He enjoys his Victorian, you know, rants about descriptions and houses and daughters leaning on dad's knees and crying. He enjoys all that. That's his comfort, you know, late in the night. I just, you know, something I just like to read, a good old Franco-Belgian comic. Now, guys, a little bit of history here. Comics, right, got different opinions about it. But in Belgium, just after the Second World War, there was a whole kind of boom of these artists who wanted to create, they were influenced by Disney, but they wanted to create something uniquely theirs. And now what they created was they created these comics, the Tintin novels, the Tintin comics, excuse me, the Asterix comics, the Snurfs comics. and Lucky Luke. Those are four of among the most famous comics. And now, and please excuse me if I mispronounce any of the names. I read them all in French. And the thing is, it really confuses me. They seem to translate them onto very strange names in English. So.
Right.
Anyway.
But Tintin then should have been Tintin, no?
Tintin. Exactly. And Asterix and Obelisk and all that kind of stuff. Now, guys, actually, I love them all. I really love them all. And but I'm only getting into Asterix today. What I love about Asterix and Obelix is, so there's always something kind of historical about these comics, always some kind of something educational. And this is about people living 50 years, I believe it was, might be getting this wrong, before Christ, or was it after? Around that time period. So before, excuse me, before. So Caesar, all these Roman empires, they were conquering Europe, and they conquered France, except this one tiny place where Druids, where Gauls lived. So basically a tribe from former France. And these guys were unstoppable because they have a Druid called Gitafix in English. Although, this is what I mean. He's called Panoramix in French. It's very confusing.
Hey.
So completely different. And he gives a potion of basically omnipotence. So you're just basically completely strong. You're indestructible. And as long as you drink this, no one can beat you. So it's kind of the thing is, you can't really beat Asterix and Obelisk. The only way you can beat them is by stopping them drinking them potions. And in fact, Obelisk actually fell into the potion when he was a baby, so he's constantly just super strong. And what I love about these comics is that they always go to some kind of different place. I'll talk about the third comic, which was probably my favorite so far, Asterix and the Goths. So they go to which is now Germany. And there's basically always kind of a culture kind of thing going on, and it's always a story about some kind of Roman emperor. He wants to mess things up. It's really about colonialism. It's really about colonialism, the whole book, and about like these French guys saying F you to the Roman Empire. And in this, it was Asterix and the Goths, kind of controversial at the time. It came out in the 60s, and they were wondering, are you trying to criticize Germany and the Nazis? All right, a bit of a controversy going on there, but really, I don't like to think too much about it. It's just a great read, guys. It's really relaxing. For those of you interested in the comic format, it's got my favorite comic format. They decided to simply make comics larger. So these are very large books, really large books, instead of just something you can put in pocket. And it makes it visually a lot more attractive. Now, guys, go for it. Read these comics for the artwork, for the great story. And honestly, I would never read this in a different language. Or I mean, I can't say never. But for me, it makes sense to read them in French.
Read it in French if you can, yeah.
Read in French if you can. But I'm serious because...
Not if you can't, though.
But I can't imagine these comics being translated into anything else, because it's actually so funny in French. But anyway, that seems very snobbish. All I'm saying, it's really great in the original language. It's really funny. And wow, I just really find this very relaxing before going to bed. And again, they're great role models. I'm really enjoying books at the moment. Great role models. You know, Victorian fathers forcing their daughters, I don't know, like to stay indoors because it's raining outside. You know, that's not really great role models. You know what I mean?
So, but PJ, this is something. This is comics, right? So this is like a Batman versus Superman type thing, right?
I knew you were going to mention that somewhere. Exactly. It's a Batman versus Superman kind of thing. So, guys, I think that's...
I actually like Tintin, and I was in the Tintin store in Brussels when I was last there. Yeah, it's nice.
I thought you were a big kind of... I thought you didn't appreciate the old ninth art or whatever it is.
Well, I'm not sitting reading Tintin, but I read a few when I was younger, and I like the idea. You know, now, I like the idea of Asterix and Obelix as well. I know what they look like and everything. I've seen them, you know. I get the aesthetic. I think they're fine.
I think they're fine, yeah. But anyway, guys, that's Dean Lowe's contribution. He thinks they're fine. I'm saying they're a bit more than fine. They're very brilliant. Oh, excuse me. Shouldn't be cursing.
You get You get nothing but the most detailed literary criticisms here. I think they're fine. That's the level of review that I'm giving.
Exactly. So, guys, read it. Learn. Now, to be honest, guys, this is also just teaching history. These Franco-Belgian comics, they teach history and geography to kids, especially down the time, 40s and 50s. They're really actually educational as well. And, yeah, so I really love, especially, I recommend the third one, Asterix and the Goths, but all of them are brilliant.
There awesome. Go. We're going to take a 90-second break to play an ad from two great podcasts, and we'll be back with our recommendations.
Hello, my name is Brecker Nurse, and I want to tell you about my fun horror movie podcast called Autopsy of a Horror Movie. On my show, I like to have fun dissecting out what makes a horror movie scary, what worked for it, what didn't, what types of fears does it play off of? Is it an allegory for any sort of message? I don't know, but let's find out. Also, I like to watch slashers. I'm a big slasher guy, so I'll watch a slasher and do a kill grade for it. I will cover the kills and I will tell you how I would grade it based on shock, method, style points, and a fourth category that is a reflection of the movie. Besides those, I'll have fun with special topic episodes, commentary tracks, interviews with guests, including some Shudder directors, so I just like to have a fun time over here. If any of this sounds interesting to you or you just want to come check me out, please head over to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere they listen to podcasts and search for Autopsy of a Horror Movie. Also, be sure to find me on Instagram at Brucker Horror, where you get fun updates and some cool little posts that I do. Thanks for listening, and I hope that you get to enjoy the show, and I'll see you on Instagram. Bye.
Hello, listeners. This is Bob from Bob's Short Story Hour, a podcast that features an eclectic array of short story recitations from both classic and contemporary authors, as well as occasional interviews and discussions about both. You can learn more by visiting us at bobsshortstoryhour.com or find us anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a good night.
So, PJ, shall I go first or do you want to go?
You go first.
My recommendation, I hope I haven't done this one already. My recommendation is The Secret Garden.
Oh, lovely story.
Do you know this book, right?
Yeah, I've only read an abridged book when I was a kid, so I love to read the original. Mm-hmm. It's great.
I read it as a child. I read the full book. I was like 9 or 10 years old. It's the first proper novel I really remember reading, that I still remember. I still remember liking.
Yeah.
And it is a children's novel, but it's not a silly children's novel. You know, it's worth reading.
Yeah.
And even at 10 years old, I kind of made that distinction between, okay, I've been reading silly books. This is a good book, you know. And there was an old film version. There's a new film version came out a year or so ago there, which I did watch. Huh. And it was all right. But basically, you've got this, the author, I should mention the author, Frances Hodgson Burnett. And this is 1911, okay? So just before World War I. Now, it's been many years, you know, since I've read this, 20, in fact. But it's a lovely book. It is good for the kids, so get it for your kids. This girl goes to, you know, her parents, you know, die or whatever. She goes to this relative's house and it's like a big old mansion with 100 locked rooms and no one's using any of the rooms because his wife's died. So he's miserable and just, you know, it's a very English, but, you know, everyone's miserable in these English books. And she discovers a garden and, you know, she's going for walks because there's nothing else to do. They just say, well, amuse yourself all day, go for a walk. And that's the only available activity, you know. So she goes for walks and she finds this walled garden and it's lovely and it's beautiful. And it's the only place nearby that has any life or any beauty. And then she discovers a little boy in the house and he's sick and takes him to the garden and he starts to get better. It's lovely. It's just a lovely book.
Awesome.
That's my recommendation.
Well, okay, that's great. I'd love to read the original book. Guys, talking about Franco-Belgian comics, I obviously have to recommend another one. So if I had to pick just one on a desert island, I'd probably pick the Lucky Luke series, probably the first one. And if you don't know, Lucky Luke is a cowboy who's basically, he has, it's Lucky Luke and Jolly Jumper, his amazing sort of incredible kind of horse. And now the reason why I think this is possibly, you know, the best comic ever or one of the best comic ever series I'm going to choose the first one, is that I rarely read about a character who's so just, what's the word, easygoing than Lucky Luke. It is just so relaxing to just dive into that person's mindset. I mean, all he does is just basically, he just goes with the flow. It's just, he's just sitting there in the desert, just enjoying kind of the atmosphere, you know, just riding his horse. And it works well in film, but I think it also works really well in comics, the Western genre. So Lucky Luke is just basically a guy who's lucky on a horse, and all kinds of things happen to him. It kind of things happen to him. He kind of deals with it, but he's incredibly lucky. And it's all got the Western stereotypes. It's the Western stories. Like, the Western stories are maybe not so original. They're very like other Western films at the time. This was the late 40s, but totally enjoyable. And you're left with an impression of, wow, this is, you know, it's always kind of him at the sunset at the end, you know, riding his horse. This is kind of a great lifestyle, even though it's dangerous as well. But he just left. It's a very kind of romantic sort of depiction of cowboys and lone rangers, and just, you know, he's alone, but he's fine with it as well. He's got his horse, Jolly Jumper. And the stories are often hilarious. And the first one, the mine, the golden, what's it called again? Sorry, La Mine d'Or, the Dig Digger. I think it's something like Dig Digger's Gold Mine in English. It's just about, you know, finding a gold mine, or like these people are trying to find gold mine, and then Lucky Luke is stopping them, and they're absolutely ridiculous, these gold diggers, and these bandits that appear, and you know, it's got a lot of stereotypes, fair enough, but it's just so comforting and relaxing and easy for the eye. So yeah, guys, I'm that's it. That's my recommendation. Just a little side note, Morris, he got the creator, writer, and illustrator of Lucky Luke, and got a bit tired of writing the comics. And to be honest, in most of the Franco-Belgian comics, there's usually a collaboration from these two people.
Right.
So what happened was, he actually started collaborating with René Goscinny, who's the writer of Asterix and Obelisk, not the illustrator. So there's a cross point. They often work together. I love that. They're kind of a team. They all knew each other. They all helped each other out and supported each other. And they made this child's medium comic a more adult, more serious format. Just like Disney was considered also just, oh, what are you doing, dealing with kids. But I just like the fact that these people, you know, they were geeky perhaps, and they thought, oh, you're not very serious. But they just turn it collectively into something higher. They become a higher art. So I've got a lot of appreciation. You know, that's why I love Brussels as well, Dean. I mean, you've been there several times, but I really love that they actually, this whole city actually respects that and honors these group of maybe 10 or more cartoonists.
Right. Well, that does sound quite nice.
Yeah. I really recommend it. So there you go, guys.
Okay, awesome. So that's our recommendations. Guys, it's a shorter episode this day. The corporation for shorter episodes has really been kicking in for us.
Yeah.
And we've been learning. But right. Don't forget to go to booksboys.com. And do you know what else you can do? Go to your Spotify's or your Alexa's, your Amazon's, whatever you listen to music on, and find the Dean and PJ Burke, and we've got music on there, and you can listen to that if you like the kind of stuff that we play at the end of some of our episodes.
It's pretty funky.
This month it's my turn, so we're going to take us out with a song I did, and nice. You won't be able to find online. It's called "Since You Left," and that I did with my friend Craig from my old work. But guys, don't forget, I want to make a big point of plugging the Patreon, because you can get this show early. You can get a Books Boys T-shirt. You can recommend books for us to read. You can get Playboys, Caper Captains, Film Fellows, Forensic Friends, everything.
All kinds of stuff.
Everything's there. Every possible alliteration show that you can think of is there. Any combination. Games, guys, it's there. Poetry Pals, yeah. It's there. Anything you want.
Totally, guys. And it's for a cheap price. We'd love to share this with you, to be honest.
So just because we didn't get to do a Playboys this month, I filled space by doing a two-part special called Games Guys. It's from the vault, so these are 9 years ago. So if you want to hear me and some other people you've never heard of from an old podcast that you can't find anymore talk about PlayStation 1 video games whilst they might have been drunk, that is definitely available as well. So
that sounds like something that I would like to listen to, actually.
So there's a lot of stuff on there. There's always stuff, you know. Great. And interviews from the vault, where I interview a lot of rock stars and musicians and things. So lots of fun stuff. Speaking of music, I went to Bert's and I saw your dad sing this week, PJ.
Nice.
And this weekend I'm going to watch the No Explanation movie. I've got it all queued up from his new movie.
Nice. Maybe you can share a link as well, guys. It is my dad. He's just released his new film. No Explanation, with his own music as well. It's pretty awesome, guys. Have a listen. And if you're ever in Belfast, check him out at Burt's. Burt's Jazz Bar. It's the place to be at the weekend. He's a suave guy with suave hair. And just want to let you guys know about that.
That's it. You can go to kieranburkeonline.com. That's the site where you can find out specifically about No Explanation.
Thanks. Exactly.
Guys, that's pretty much us done. So I'm going to get the DJ to spin the record since she left.
DJ.
And we'll be back in about a month.
All right, guys. See ya.
Since you left, I've torn up my heart. Don't know how I'm making you start. I can hardly breathe. Thankful crying. My soul feels like a tripped out dying. Since you left, I'm on my own. Trying to figure out why you've gone. I can hardly work for daydreaming. My soul feels like don't you leave it. Since you left, I cry myself to sleep. The razor cuts, but not so deep. I can hardly focus my attention. Sorrow's just a constant distraction.
Since you left, you tore out my heart. Why did you have to go and leave me, baby? It hurts so, so bad, deep inside.
Since you left, my life's a mess.
I miss
your touch, your gentle caress. I can hardly see past all the distress.
Take a dive to your favorite dress, girl.
Since you left, I'm not doing so well. My heart is crushed, my soul's in hell. And I can hardly survive this pain. My only desire is to see you again. Since you left. Since you left.
Oh, why did you have to go and break my heart, girl?
Since you left.
Since you left. Since you left.
Since you left.
Books Boys was presented by The Deem and PJ Burke in association with Thaddeus Penguin Productions. This episode was brought to you by our sponsor,
virgilstoursofhell.gov.
If you would like to get in touch, you can email us at booksboys@hotmail.com or visit us at booksboys.com. The intro uses Driving in the 70s from the Of Soundtracks and Garage Bands EP by Trapdoor. And the outro uses Dog's Light by Bravo Max from the album of the same name. All music used is either Podsafe or used with permission. If you'd like to support the show, click on the Amazon or Audible referral links on booksboys.com or go to patreon.com/booksboys.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Boys, and get all of the Bufanda Boys bonus shows. Thank you kindly for listening to us. Please tell your friends and come back next time for another episode of Books Boys. Read some books!
Yeah, I'm just so glad. I took it out on Emma. It wasn't Emma's fault. It was Persuasion's fault. It was Pride and Prejudice, the whole lot. I'm just so glad to be done with Jane Austen. Next month, Orwell. The dark light, baby.